This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, it's Danny. I'm 45. I'm from Manchester. I joined the OTI community in October 21. I was sceptical at first because I'm not on any sort of social media, and I've been in a couple of other very large online sober communities before. I was amazed right from the offset at the involvement that Shaz and Ben have in the community. I thoroughly enjoy the Zoom calls. And I've met some pretty good pals along the way that I didn't realise I was in the market for. We've been out for hikes. It's just great. I've been in touch with like-minded people, and it really has been a game changer. So I'd encourage anybody to give it a go.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's fantastic to have you listening. We are still in the month of January, so I'm going to say it again. I'm not bothered. Happy New Year, because you might be listening for the first time. Welcome to our podcast, where we basically bang on about sobriety week in, week out. You may be discovering us for the very first time, if that is the case. An introduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley. I am based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I turned 50 in November, and not only did I turn 50, before that, my milestone was 5 years alcohol free. It's bonkers. Never thought I'd be 50 and sober. It's been hands down the best decision I've ever made in my life. In a very, very short nutshell, because we've got to get to our guest today, we've got a lot to get through. I used to drink far too much, too often, too quickly. I never intended on a life of sobriety. I thought it would be an absolute crock of. I thought it would be rubbish. It turns out it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, and that's why this podcast exists, so we can let you know that it's not all bad. In fact, it's really, really good. Ben, how are you, my co-host?
Hello.
Ben Anderson.
Very well, yes. Hi, Shaz. I'm Ben. I'm 35. I live in Liverpool. And this year, in the summer, I'll be 4 years alcohol-free. I think my favourite quotes that describe my drinking, it was Billy Connolly that said, I gave up alcohol. I gave up drinking whilst it was still my idea. One of our community members on our very first Zoom call, I didn't have a rock bottom, but I could see it from where I was standing. I know that I wasn't a dependent drinker when I decided to stop drinking alcohol. Initially for 3 months, then went on to six, and then I went, oh, this feels good, I'm going to give it a year. Then I had a year of data, and I looked back and I thought, work's going better, oh, family life's improved. Right, maybe not drinking is a good thing for me. I never intended to give up alcohol forever. And I think it's important to say that I was a binge drinker. I wasn't a daily drinker. I wasn't physically dependent on alcohol when I decided to remove it. But to use another quote, I love the quote from Desmond Tutu. We've got to stop pulling people out the river and go upstream and find out why they're falling in. When it comes to alcohol for me, I was going in one direction. It was going downhill. And I'm very happy that Over the Influence came into my life when it did, because it stopped me from going down a track that was quite obviously on the horizon. Well, I say that, Shaz, we never know, do we?
You don't know. You don't know, do you?
But I wasn't willing to find out. I am delighted. Shaz, you do the big intro, because you know how I get when we've got...
You've got all formal.
I know.
You've got all formal and professional. I'm surprised you're not wearing a shirt.
I know.
And a suit jacket.
I apologise.
And actually, before I introduce the guest, I think that was a record today, Ben. I think you squeezed in three quotes in the space of
about
2 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well done. Well done. Really good. Really, really good. It's a pleasure to introduce our guest on the podcast this week. It is Professor David Nutt. You may well have read one, if not more, of his books. I know one is on my bookshelf. Ben is holding up the one he's got there, his copy of Drink. Professor Nutt, from this point forward, we're going to call you David, but I'm going to give you your full title now. Professor David Nutt, welcome to Over the Influence. How are you?
Yeah, apart from being a little cold, I'm otherwise very well. Thank you.
It's really good to have you back. For anybody that's maybe not heard your name before or read any of your books, could you just let us know a little bit about you?
Well, I'm a psychiatrist. I've been a doctor for, it's 50 years now, since I I actually started training and I've been practicing for 47 years. I'm mostly a researcher. I'm at Imperial College London. I research on the effects of drugs in the brain. I'm called a psychopharmacologist for that reason. And I do that because the brain, as you probably know, uses chemical transmission to communicate between cells and neurons. But also, of course, we use chemicals called medicines to help treat disorders. And over my life, I've done a lot of research in the field of alcohol and alcohol treatments, and also now begun to explore alternative options, developing drinks that may give people what most people want from alcohol, which is relaxation, sociability, but without the complications and the harms that alcohol produces.
Can we start there, Professor Nutt? And I know you said call you Dave, but I find it difficult.
He's struggling with that, aren't you? It's too cash.
David, because in drink, one of the opening lines in your introduction, as a doctor, I've seen firsthand all the types of havoc that alcohol causes, from liver disease and cancer to drink driving accidents and violence. What is clear is that you don't have to be a homeless alcoholic on the street to be harming your body and or brain with booze. Can you tell us from your years of research in terms of what are the harms that you're talking about there?
Well, I'm talking about people doing really, really crazy, stupid things when they're young and drink. And I mean, over Christmas, we've probably been with about six accidents reported on the national news of cars, usually of young men, crashing and many of them dying. And most of those accidents are going to be caused by alcohol. And there'll be a vast amount of head injuries caused by people either falling over when they're drunk or being beaten up when they're drunk. So, you know, I've seen the violence and the damage to the body caused by alcohol. Orthopedic wards, 50% of orthopedic wards, of the patients on orthopedic wards are there because of alcohol. So I've seen the sort of trauma from alcohol. I've seen the behavioral disturbance. I've seen people who are demented because of alcohol, people who have Korsakoff syndrome because of alcohol. And then, of course, I've seen people who have vomited blood because they've got cirrhosis and they've damaged their liver so that they can't deal with the blood supply through it. So I've seen people with heart failure due to alcohol. I've seen people with skin problems. Some cancers I've seen, I'm not sure we can necessarily in any case say they're due to alcohol, but we know alcohol is related to quite a few cancers. So and every doctor, pretty much every day, meets someone whose problems are either directly or related to alcohol.
Which is quite shocking when you say that every doctor has met somebody who has problems related to alcohol. I mean, I'm looking, we talked there about the personal impact on the individual. But again, and just after you talk about exactly that in your book, Drink, policing drunkenness in the UK costs over $6 billion a year. The health costs are over $3 billion a year. I mean, this book was published, well, now 4 years ago for the first time. I imagine those stats are still pretty much the same, aren't they? If not on the increase.
It's a very good question. I'd be surprised if they've gone down because of inflation. I think drinking has plateaued, but I think the harms of drinking haven't gone down yet. They're not rising anymore. And of course, one of the problems is that you go to meetings and where we talk about policy for alcohol, and the drinks industry lobbyists say, oh, look, it's all flattened. Look, you know, we're all right. We're stable. Is that all right, David? And I say, no, actually, because we're stable three times where we should have been, or where we were 30, 40 years ago. You know, to accept the damage we have at present just because it's not going up is not... is definitely not a sensible or rational or acceptable argument. No, we should be reducing the harms of alcohol to as low as we can get. And because one of the remarkable examples of how you can do that was France. So I can't remember what I probably mentioned in the book, that when I was training in medicine in the early 1970s, if someone came onto the ward with alcoholic liver problems, which led to fluid in their stomach, we called it ascites. And if someone had ascites, then, you know, there would be medical students would descend on them in the way that, you know, wasps descend on a picnic in the summer. Because, you might only ever see one in your life. And we used to look at the rarity of ascites and look at the frequency of it in France, you know, where the alcoholic cirrhosis was 10 times what we had in Britain. In 1970, 10 times. Now the French have lower levels of cirrhosis than we have, and much lower levels than the Scots have. Why? because the French decided to do something about it. And they did some very simple things. They priced out cheap alcohol. They reduced the drink driving limit. They banned alcohol advertising. And they've actually now, you know, they have less alcohol-related damage than we have. And that's happened in just 30, 40 years.
I think that's so interesting. Chaz, you want to, I know you want to ask Professor a
question. No, carry on.
But
you carry on.
Doesn't
carry
that show
on.
You the importance of policy there? And I know that you've had a few run-ins with the government in the past, Professor Nutt. One very famous one, where you said that alcohol was the most dangerous drug in our society. Is that right?
Most harmful drug in our society. And it's also that particular assessment has been redone now in four separate jurisdictions, apart from three others. The European Department of Justice were so impressed with our technology. They weren't actually interested in alcohol. They were interested in this technology for assessing the harms of new drugs like mefedrine. So they commissioned a European report using the same technology, and it came to the same conclusion. Alcohol is the most harmful drug in Europe. And then Australian experts and very recently New Zealand experts have done the same. And in all those countries and all those jurisdictions, alcohol is the most harmful drug. Why? Because it's the most widely used drug. And it's not the most harmful drug of all drugs to the user. You know, I mean, crystal meth and fentanyls would be more dangerous to the user. But because of the wide use of alcohol, it's the most harmful drug to society overall.
Yet still, when we talk about alcohol and drugs, it's always in that way. It's alcohol and drugs. Mm. Do you know what I mean? That the two are always referred to very, very separately. Mm. Massive question. Where do we go? How do we sort it? What would you like to see?
Well, we try now to use the phrase alcohol and other drugs. And you know, that does really get under the skin of the drinks industry, because they really do not want it to be considered a drug, but it obviously is. I mean, in fact, it is a drug. It wasn't until my sacking, interestingly, when I was sacked by the government's chief drugs advisor in 2009, I was sacked for saying that basically alcohol was the most harmful drug, and drugs like mefedrine and LSD and MDMA were less harmful than alcohol. And the government then was trying to say it wasn't a drug. But when I was sacked, my successor, Les Iverson, insisted that when they were allowed to consider alcohol harms in all considerations of drug harms as well. So they've now conceded it is a drug. And in fact, if any of you follow the bizarre, convoluted legislation around nitrous oxide, you'll discover government ministers were saying, "Well, of course it's a drug. It's but it's too popular a drug for us to do anything about." So I think they've all conceded now that it's a drug. The challenge is getting them to do something about it, because the drinks industry has become extremely effective at lobbying. It isn't lobbied. It used to be that they just paid MPs to vote for what they wanted. Now they don't do that. They do it in a much more sophisticated way. They do it through what they call the leisure industry and the hospitality industry, and MPs go off on little jollies that are supported indirectly through the drinks industry. So there's still a great deal of resistance in Parliament to doing anything about drink. And you've got the subsidised bars, you know, and the whole culture of drinking. I mean, yeah, I don't know if you know, I wrote a paper a few years ago arguing that we should breathalyse MPs before they vote, because I find it really quite distasteful, the idea that they can make decisions about our futures. You know, they could vote for nuclear war drunk, and that seems to me rather dangerous precedent to set. And no other country in the world, I think, with the possible exception of Australia, I'm not entirely clear, allows politicians to drink on the job.
I love how frankly you speak, Professor Nutt. And I think, you know, the drinks industry is something that you are entering. You know, you have entered, of course. I've got a bottle of Sentia downstairs. I think it's really interesting. Should we talk about Sentia now, Chaz, and what it is and the approach? Because it is, we talk about alcohol-free options a lot on this podcast, on our premium podcast. Do you class Sentia as an alcohol-free option? Let's start with, what is Sentia for someone who's never heard of it before?
So Sentia is a herbal drink that we have invented to replace alcohol for people who want to get the effect of maybe, you know, half a pint or half a unit of alcohol. So it gives you a slight relaxing effect, particularly useful in social situations, parties, social gatherings, family Christmases, where you want to take the edge off the tension without getting yourself into difficulty, so you don't cut your fingers off when you're carving the turkey, for instance. So it's a sort of third way of dealing with of confronting alcohol. So it's not alcohol; it's definitely alcohol free, but it's not non-active. We call it a functional drink, and it's designed to be functional, as I've explained. And the ingredients are all herbs that have been in use in the food chain and or as food supplements, certainly for decades, if not centuries. And this particular combination that turns on the GABA system in the brain. That's why our company is called GABA Labs. And turning on the GABA system, that leads to this relaxation and dissolves away social tension that we all get when we're meeting strangers and when we get in a party, for instance. But if it doesn't matter how much center you take, you will never turn on the other systems which alcohol works on, which give you all the problems of alcohol. So it's very targeted at giving people what most people want from alcohol, which is a little bit of social relaxation.
There's two sides to this, isn't there? It's a really fascinating thing to talk about. We talk about, as Ben mentioned, alcohol-free options a lot on the podcast. And for some people, they don't touch them with a barge pole. And we get that and we fully respect that, because for some people it can be deemed triggering. Just the smell of maybe an AF lager or something like that. Yeah. On the flip side, you've talked there about use it as a social lubricant, maybe making an event a little bit easier. What would you say to somebody that would, you know, put across the argument, well, hang on, I'm stopping drinking for a reason and I want to tackle these events without the buzz, without the alcohol, without, you know, something that's going to change my state?
Well, I would say great and good luck. And I'm certainly not encouraging people who've become sober to use Centia as a, you know, I mean, I we know people do, and as far as we know, it doesn't cause relapse, but of course it's perfectly conceivable it might, because if you're using it in those situations, and as you pointed out, if you're using it to get the same effect, it could potentially trigger. So it's absolutely critical for people to understand it isn't a medicine, it's not a treatment for people who've got alcohol dependence who want to stay sober. Our ambition is to reduce generation by generation the proportion of people who get into problems with alcohol. We think a lot of people would value the alternative that for health reasons was better for them, and that's why we've wanted to make it available. In a dream scenario, if the whole world stopped drinking alcohol and everyone drank Centia, then we'd save 3 million lives a year. The reason I think we can't expect everyone to be completely abstinent is because that actually is not easy. And maybe there are some people who actually do really struggle, and they could become quite even more isolated than they are at present. So, you know, alcohol has the reason alcohol is so popular is because it does serve some kind of function. Majority of people who use alcohol are not dependent. They're using it sensibly in a controlled way, and they presume get some value from it. We just want to take away the risks of the 15% or so who can't use it like that by giving them an alternative.
I think it's really important to, you know, in drink, you talk about some of the benefits of alcohol, especially societally. And I think, you know, we've talked about that loads of times, Chaz, haven't we? An episode that always springs to mind was the fabulous Unmumsy Mum episode, Chaz, with Sarah Turner.
Yeah, really good.
Where we had a conversation about how, for her, she can look back on her drinking days. She's completely alcohol-free now. And when we spoke to her, I think she was about 6 months in, but has carried that on, Chaz, hasn't she, since that episode, whenever it was. But for her, she kind of looked at it as, you know, in my 20s, it worked for me. You know, this substance that, you know, it helped me to escape from my everyday reality, helped me to relax a bit, helped me to unwind. It worked for me when I was in my 20s. actually becoming a mom and settling down and going into my 30s, that exactly the same substance, it could be that glass of white wine, it could be exactly the same brand of white wine that you drank throughout your 20s, suddenly doesn't work for you in your 30s. I think, you know, for us, we are very clear about how, you know, we don't judge people who drink. We don't think that alcohol is evil necessarily. For us, we've made the choice to completely remove it because it works better for our life. I think with Sentia, the thing that I'd really like to understand more, is it one drink? Is Sentia the drink? Or is your ambition that Sentia, or the, you know, the what constitutes Sentia, completely replaces alcohol? Like, could it have that possibility where alcohol brands, for example, now come to you and say, what is it that's in Sentia? Can we put that into our vodka? Can we put that into our beer?
No, well, that is something we're hoping they will do. But it won't be Sentia, because Sentia is a drink and it's a complicated drink and it's difficult to make. And it's also, there's a lot of fluid in it. The bottles are heavy, so it has quite a big carbon footprint. Our real ambition is to move to the next step, which is to make an ingredient, which we're currently calling Alcarel.
Yes, okay.
Which will give of a low dose of alcohol, but which can be put into any drink. So the plan would be to license that to any drinks company and to every drinks company to make alternatives to alcohol containing drinks. And I think in you know, 20, 30 years, it will be commonplace to have functional mocktails that contain Alcarel rather than alcohol. And I think people will prefer that for the reasons, health reasons, and also because you won't be able to get wasted on it. So those people who are vulnerable to binge drinking, well, it won't trigger that impact in them.
Describe and talk us through what GABA actually is in, like, simple terms. If possible.
Well, this is, yeah, so GABA, your brain is a sort of, like, it's like a ginormous telephone exchange, but the connections, the plugs are not transmitting electricity, they're transmitting two chemicals. One chemical is an on chemical called glutamate, and one's an off chemical called GABA. So the analogy I like to use is if you're driving a car, if your brain is a car, if you push your foot down on the accelerator, you release glutamate, and you put your foot down on the brake, you release GABA to balance out the glutamate. So GABA regulates your brain. It keeps you, for most of us, in that state of balance, of equanimity between being too up or too sedated. But being up, which means there's more glutamate around, is strongly associated with being anxious. So when you get into situations where glutamate goes up, people get anxious in social situations. And by using something that enhances GABA a little bit, you can attenuate that. You can put people back into that situation where they can overcome the absolutely completely natural anxiety of talking to other people. And then, and that's the wonderful thing about it, once you start to engage in conversation, all the benefits of conversation emerge. And that is, you know, that's the point we were just talking about in the beginning. Socialization is a critical aspect of human life. The majority of people today will have engaged with their partners with a drink in their hand or over a meal which would contain alcohol, because alcohol allows you to get into a state where you can truly relate to the other person in a more relaxed and intimate fashion, and that then leads to all the benefits of human social ability, both at the sort of personal dyadic level, but also, of course, larger at the family level and at a bigger social level.
I think the last time we spoke, David, you were quite interested in our approach, in the sense that we started to have this conversation. We didn't go too far with it in the last episode, if I remember rightly. But for example, for me and Sharon now, we're at the stages in our alcohol freeness, I suppose, where we feel completely comfortable going into any social situation. I mean, I'm going to say that I don't fancy going to nightclubs until 3 o'clock in the morning anymore.
That's
I don't
an
know
age
if that's
thing,
because
Ben,
I'm alcohol free or because I'm, you know, I've got a 1-year-old son and a wife, and you know, maybe it is, you know. But I think I am at the stage now where I feel comfortable at weddings. I got married last summer and my wedding was, you know, the drinks were flowing for anyone who wanted them. Me and Shaz and a few other people who are alcohol free at the wedding were drinking kombucha instead. You know, I think I feel personally very comfortable socializing without alcohol. And I think it's because for me, and again, everyone is different, but for me, this is a choice that I have made. And it's a choice that I know, analyzing the data of me as a drinker versus me as a non-drinker, I know that for me, this is a sensible choice. And that actually, I've now brought things into my life. For example, Professor, I'd sit in the pub on a Friday night and I'd say, I'm going to climb Snowdon. I used to climb mountains when I was a kid all the bloody time. And then I'd wake up with a hangover and I'd lie in bed and I'd order pizza and then I'd start drinking again. And then I'd wake up on Sunday and lie in bed. Whereas now I'm alcohol free. I do climb Snowdon. And this year we're going to do Ben Nevis. We're going to do Snowdon with Over the Influence. We're doing Scarfell Pike. And then in September, I'm doing all three back to back. Now, I think now if I started drinking again, I would give that up. You know, I know that I didn't have that in my life when I was a drinker. So why could I expect to start drinking again and to think that would still be there? And I get enormous pleasure from it. I think when we did the episode last time, I think that's our angle and that's our approach. But I do remember finding it very difficult at the beginning. Do you hope that, okay, let's go back to Sentia, because I think the ambition for Alcorel is incredible. You know, if you're looking at essentially, if alcohol companies were activating the GABA system, but not activating the other systems that lead to addiction, for example, that you still get that kind of relaxing effect of an alcoholic drink without the issues that come with it. Are you hoping that something like Sentia does help people to become alcohol free? Because, you know, yes, you can use this as a jump to becoming alcohol free, or is this a direct replacement for alcohol? Is it that you're hoping that people reduce their alcohol consumption by using Sentia?
Well, it's a bit of everything. I mean, I think we're starting off from the premise that there are enough people out there that would prefer to drink less and they struggle. And so if you're given an option, then, and Sentia being that option, then they can discover that they can drink less. And then they can begin to get the experiences that you've both got, which is that actually you can function perfectly well or even better if you're not drinking alcohol. So that's the sort of the entry level. You know, give people a chance to think about it, give them something they can do rather than just say, I won't drink at all. And in fact, one of the interesting patterns of drinking we're seeing with Sentia is that people are saying, okay, so I will go and have a Sentia and then I'll have a dark alcoholic drink. And then they'll reduce by maybe 50% their alcohol intake because they're spacing them out with Sentia, but they're still maintaining that level of enjoyment and personability through the course of the evening. So you can use, you know, you can use it in that way as well. The bigger benefit may be also that it begins to get people to engage in a discussion as to kind of why they're drinking. I mean, you know, your abstinence is, well, I think you probably all agree, you know, you said that in your introduction. I mean, abstinence is not a trivial thing to do. It's not easy to do. You know, if you can maybe live your life without having needing to get to that point, then I don't know. I mean, I'll ask that question back to you. Suppose you could have had a sensible relationship with alcohol. Would you still today want to be abstinent? Maybe you wouldn't. Maybe if you hadn't lost control, or, you know, you didn't have hangovers and things.
That's really interesting because that gets us into the whole sort of discussion. That's a whole debate about what is that, isn't it? You know, what is it? I, for one, we talk about this a lot in our premium podcast as well. In many ways, wish I'd never started drinking alcohol, but that's, you know, 2020 vision in hindsight, you know, I'm an expert and yeah, wish I'd never touched the flipping stuff. Shah, who's watching this call now, is the trick is never to start.
I mean, I suppose if you could have foreseen the future when you started drinking for you, then maybe you wouldn't have started. But you see, for the vast majority of people, alcohol isn't so problematic enough. The vast majority of people don't become abstinent, not because they can't, because they could, because they don't want to. Because so for the vast majority of drinkers, there is a benefit to alcohol which offsets the harms.
And would you deny everyone that benefit? Well, the answer is we tried that. That was kind of tried in prohibition in the States and in Sweden and Norway back in the 20s. It didn't go particularly well. So I'm kind of taking a bit of a sort of middle ground here. I mean, I think
Extreme liberalisation or extreme prohibition is not what most people want.
No, I would agree with that. And I would absolutely 100% say it's about choice. It's absolutely about choice. And now, the way I live my life, 5 years alcohol-free, I choose not to drink. I don't. If I wanted to drink to die, I could. I don't want to anymore. That's the difference. And you know, I will say that I've had a bottle of Sentia in your cupboard, and a bottle of your Sentia in my cupboard in the kitchen, and I've enjoyed it. And it's not been a case of really want it. I was curious. I was absolutely curious to find out what it tasted like, you know, reading about the effects and things like that. And it's all gone. Didn't all go in one night. It lasted me weeks, months, because I don't really bother with any sort of alcohol-free options now.
Very reassured, Sharon.
You're reassured.
Very reassured, because, I would hate it to have triggered some relapse. So,
absolutely not, because for me that's not an issue. I don't describe myself as being in recovery. I was somebody that drank a hell of a lot for a long, long time and then decided to take a break, which has now led me to living a sober life. And I quite often say, you know, if people go, isn't it a shame Sharon can't drink? I go, well, no, it's not, because I can do what I want. I'm just choosing not to now, because life for me is immeasurably better without it. And I do enjoy having the choice, be it an alcohol-free fizz, be it a bottle of Sentia Red in my cupboard. It's there should I choose to drink it. And I think that's massively important, is that people do have a choice in sobriety, or if they continue to drink, that's nothing to do with me. Do you know what I mean?
No, well, yes, you're but I guess you're probably not completely typical. You've got many attributes which I think fill in the gap. But,
you know. I have to say, I think the more we do this, you know, we have had a million downloads now on this podcast. We've got hundreds of members of our community. We've done hundreds of hours of Zoom calls with people in our community. We've done loads of walks, kind of the face-to-face. And I think actually, I don't, like, you know, Sharon is an incredible woman, Professor. No, absolutely. Wouldn't argue with you there.
There is no doubt about that.
But she's not out of the norm. She's not abnormal. She doesn't have superpowers. You know, she is a normal woman in many ways. Extraordinary others, Shaz, of course. But I think the more people that we meet, and I think it is interesting that the power that it is a choice, and that's obviously something that you talk about too. Can I ask, how is Sentia going? Because I've just checked, and we last spoke in October 2022, so about 14 months ago. Now, 15 months ago. How is it going? How is it landing with the market?
Well, it's growing. It's growing. I mean, we had very good sales in dry January last year. Actually, probably because science journalists began to write about it rather than just drink journalists. It captivated or captured the imagination of people who'd never heard of it before, rather than people who were drinking and looking for alternatives. And that seems to be keeping up. And we've also going to launch in it. We've sent a load to America. We're going to be selling in America next week, I hope.
Excellent.
So fingers crossed it'll do even better.
Can I ask Professor Nutt, because we've spoken about this before as well, that, you know, for what you like to do is provide people with the information. You know, we are all adults and we can make our own decisions. You like to educate people on alcohol, drugs, the harms, but also, you know, the perceived benefits as well. Are you doing Dry January this year, Professor Nutt? Because as we, you know, you've told us before that you do drink occasionally.
I suppose I am, but inadvertently.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah, it's so we've got a young puppy, and that's very challenging. That's his hard work as a young baby. So I'm definitely, because I got to get up at 6 every morning and get him out. So,
what sort of puppy did you get, David?
So we had three Labradors, and one died rather suddenly in November. So the other two are quite old. So we thought we better get a puppy so before the others die, and so they could be he could be brought up by the bigger dogs. And by and large, he is, but they're not very good at opening the door, so let him out for his wee. But the answer is not consciously doing Dry January, but by default, I suppose.
Have you ever thought for you of kind of giving sobriety a go? Alcohol freeness a go?
Oh, after every hangover, absolutely. Yes.
It's really interesting. Coming back to that quote, I've seen firsthand all the types of havoc that alcohol causes, from liver disease and cancer to drink driving accidents and violence. I think it's really interesting because I remember when we spoke before, I felt like you went into research mode when you started asking us a few questions about why we chose to be alcohol free and that you were curious about our choice.
Well, I'm curious about how your abilities. That's one of the things I find it's, you know, intriguing, because I think you probably know, and I guess most of the people on this call, have probably failed at least once in trying to stay absent alcohol free. I mean, so I'm interested in the skills that you've got and the techniques you use to maintain that, because and particularly to deal with the social challenges, because my experience of talking to people who don't drink is that they find it the biggest challenge is when they're with their peers or their old friends, or when they're being encouraged, everyone else is drinking, and they're being either encouraged or even ridiculed for not drinking, and that and the skills to deal with that, that's really, really, you know, that's seriously, I mean, it's unethical what people do, but it's so common, isn't it?
It's hard. It's really, really hard at first, and I can only speak from experience. It's really, really hard. But once you've sort of cracked it, and it's not a case of like hanging on and white knuckling and all getting through this. Once, you know, for me, the realization that actually I can go out and I can socialize. Don't get me wrong, David. The way I socialise now has changed because, you know, I choose not to drink, so I don't really want to be in some ropey bar until the early hours. Do you know what I mean? But overcoming those worries and anxieties and those social challenges, once that's nailed, and don't get me wrong, it takes time and it takes, excuse my language, balls of steel sometimes. And
Sharon,
it is hard.
David's a professor.
You'll understand where I'm coming from. It's fine. It is. It's hard. But once you've done that and you've mastered it, it is like, and Ben said before, I think he said I don't have any superpowers. I disagree massively. I've got alcohol-free superpowers. Because what?
Exactly. That's the point I was making.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. No, but it gives you more energy to go on to the next and the next event, and you can do this. And it's, of course, it's not without its challenges. Of course it is. But the longer you go and the harder you work at it and the stronger you get, the easier it gets. And now, it's just natural. It just comes naturally. And there's nothing quite like a natural high when you're meeting your friends or you're doing something that gives you a buzz that in the past I would have sought at the bottom of a bottle of Pinot, you know.
No, I can see that. And I guess it's given that it's, I think I've seen a change in the last decade. To say you don't drink, it used to be to say you kind of admit to being weird.
Oh, completely. Now,
I don't drink, you know. What I think we've managed to have, you know, bash that stigma on the head that non-drinking was somehow weird. That's serious progress, and that's why, you know, the alcohol consumption levels are flattened or falling, because there are people who just decided drink less or not drink at all, and that's such an important and that's accepted now. It's not an aberration. It's not weirdness.
It's just
a rational lifestyle choice, and there's a lot of evidence to support you in what you're doing.
Yeah, completely. And I think there's no coincidence as well, David, when we look around at members in our community. Yeah, we have younger members. We have people in their 20s and their 30s, like Ben. I still consider him to be considerably younger than me. You know, you hit 40, 50, 60 and beyond, and you're like, I'm done. I'm done with this. I don't ever want another hangover. Absolutely not, you know. But I'll quite happily have a glass of your Sentia with ice in my garden when the summer comes. Not a problem. Because it's about choice, isn't it?
It is. And I think what's interesting is that there are people even younger than Ben that are making decisions not to drink.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not entirely sure why, whether that's just rebelling against their parents' generation or whether it's that, you know, they're embarrassed about having a video taken and posted on TikTok when they do something stupid when they're drunk or whatever. But there's definitely a move, people to be, there's definitely an appropriate, much more appropriate discussion about alcohol these days than there was 10 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I've got three children. The eldest two are 23 and 20, youngest is 15. So legally, he's not even allowed to be down there, though I'm sure he's had a couple of cans in a field camping with his mates, that sort of thing. But they are making different choices. They're not bothered. They're not interested. Much more to be, you know, much more else to be doing.
Yeah, and that's very exciting, isn't it? You know, I think they see through some of the myths of alcohol.
I think so. I genuinely think it is strength in numbers too. And it is because I think back to when I really started to drink when I was at university and in my 20s, and it was absolutely to be part of the tribe, David. You know, it was to be there with doing what everyone else is doing. I didn't want to stick out as the person who wasn't. And I didn't. There were definitely times that I had a bloody great time as a drinker.
Yes.
Definitely. And I'll never hide that. Sometimes I had great days, great nights, and alcohol played a huge part of that. There were some that were just terrible. You know, I'd just say stupid things and I'd wake up feeling like crap and I'd be anxious the next day. And, you know, it was, I think for me, what we can say, Sharon, because it is very different if you're coming from a physical dependence. You know, for us, we didn't get to that point, and we can say that because we didn't have physical withdrawal from alcohol. Mm-hmm. And of course, we must say this every time. If you think that you are potentially physically dependent on alcohol, before you decide to remove it, you must go and see your doctor, because it can be fatal to remove alcohol if you have a physical dependence on it. But I think, you know, that the how do you do it question, we see it all the time. It's a light bulb moment, and it's the same light bulb moment for everyone we speak to and everyone that we see it. And for me, it's summed up in this quote from James Clear. Can you tell I like a quote, Professor Nutt? It generally feels better to run towards something than to run away from something. Focus on what's pulling you in, not what you're trying to avoid. I think that's it. It's that psychological switch where you go, you give up one thing, but you gain so much more. And I think it's the power of the mind, actually. As soon as you kind of accept that, as soon as you decide, this is what I'm going towards, and I'm not running away from something now, I'm running towards something better. That's the switch, absolutely. I think, that makes it stick.
Yeah, positive reinforcement. Yeah,
absolutely.
Getting something very positive. Mm. And that's why punishing people for doing things like drinking too much doesn't work.
Quite.
Thank you for your messages as well, and the questions that you put in the chat box as part of your membership with Over the Influence. You can join our podcast recordings, not all of them, just some of them, for the special guests, Professor David Nutt. So Camilla has said, David, I used to drink alcohol mainly to help with my anxiety. Stopping drinking is helping tremendously, but I wonder, can we ever cure anxiety naturally? Big question.
No, it's a hugely important question, a very common experience. And I think in the book I wrote about one of my patients who had a lot of social anxiety and used to drink because of the social anxiety, but of course the withdrawal made it worse. So you know, you can actually aggravate your problems by trying to deal with anxiety with alcohol. Can we get over it in other ways? Yes. I mean, there are other ways. There are medicines for severe social anxiety, but there's also psychological treatments. And you can kind of, in a way, and maybe, you know, Sharon's the person to answer this, because it's about learning how to talk to people without feeling anxious. And a lot of it's about getting that confidence just to start. Once you've started, conversations flow, but it's picking up the courage just to make that first introduction and without stammering. See, I've done it without stammering.
There we go. No, exactly what you're trying to say. Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you, Camilla, for your question. The rest of the comments are basically to do with, we've got comments about the younger generation. They've got more access to information and knowledge about alcohol.
Do you mind, Charles, if I go to Char's comment? Professor Nutt, do you agree with this or disagree? Char said that she believes that everybody has the potential to be adversely affected by alcohol because everyone has a brain. And alcohol is a drug. It's the drug, not the person. What do you think about that comment?
Well, it's always both, isn't it? Because we know, there's an enormous individual variation in the impact of alcohol. I mean, I kind of made that point earlier. We've got 80% of the adult population in Britain drinking alcohol, but probably 15%, only 15% are dependent. I mean, that's too many. And that isn't because of the drug. That's because of the person. Of course, if you force people to drink more and more, they more and more become dependent. But the ability of people to titrate or decide on how much they drink and how to drink that's a very individual thing. And it's partly socially conditioned and it's partly due to brain chemistry, I think.
Okay. Interesting. Shaz, anything more from you?
No, I'm just seeing we've got no more questions there.
Is it okay to disagree with the professor?
I hope so.
I feel it's just, I think that's really interesting. And we haven't got loads and loads of time left, Professor Nutt, to go into it. But I truly believe, in terms of is it the person or is it the substance? So what you're saying is it's the person in the sense of their unique brain's chemical makeup. But of course, if the substance wasn't inputted in the first place to change that chemical makeup.
Yeah. I always have a triangle when I talk about addiction. There are three points of the triangle. One is the availability of the drug. If the drug's not available, if never been invented, you ain't going to be addicted to it. The second is the individual's personal characteristics, and the third is the drug itself. And different, there are drugs which can be addictive to some people and not to others for reasons which aren't fully understood. And we know genetics is going to play a part. We know that the children, male sons of male alcoholics inherit a resistance to alcohol, so they can drink more before they're damaged by it. But actually that ends up making them more likely to become dependent because they can achieve higher levels of consumption with less immediate harm. So, there are individual genetic and there will be other factors which determine or at least play a part in people's vulnerability.
I think that's really interesting about the tolerance, because I remember I used to pride myself on that. Oh, I've got a really high tolerance and I can drink 12 pints. Actually, the damage that 12 pints is doing to my liver, for example, just because I might not be falling over at 12 pints like someone else might be, it's still doing the damage.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I was one of those people that would always go, I don't get hangovers, me. I'm absolutely fine. It's because I lived in a state of perpetual hangover and I didn't know what it felt like to be fresh.
Yeah, indeed. And that's there are plenty on this call that will sympathise with that, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We're out of time. It's absolutely flown by. Professor David Nutt, thank you so much for joining us for this discussion. It feels like a bit of a discussion today and over the influence.
It's great. I love it that we do this. It's really important that we do examine this from all angles. And I know that this is going to be an episode that prompts reaction, as it was last time when you were
it
on,
was,
Professor
Nutt. Actually, yeah, it was.
But I think it's important that we do discuss it from every angle. It's not just completely about removing it. It's really interesting. The ambition for Alcarel in particular, potentially very exciting.
Thank you very much. Well, it's always great to talk to you guys because you know more about the personal experience than I do.
Hey, listen, anytime you want to chat, David, we can talk about it. No problem. We can talk about socialising, how to navigate sticky situations. I'll give you my email address. It'd be ace to have a chat about all things alcohol-free. David, before you go, if anybody hasn't read your book or if they'd like to get their hands and on a bottle of Centia, give it a plug. Where can they find it?
So you can find the book in any booksellers or on Amazon. And you can find Centia just type in centiaspirits.com and then there's the website, then you can order from there.
Amazing. And there we go. Shannon, on this call as we speak, has just said ordered the book. She's done it. Bang. Amazing. Professor David Knott, thank you for your time.
It's been a pleasure, as always.